This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 58 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa, and with me on the show today is my co-host, who is now labeled as a golf course terrorist, and she will tell you why. Her name is Michelle Scribner-McLean. Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Oh, you had to bring that up, huh? I still got anger. So I live on a golf course, and I was running on the golf course yesterday. I have never had a problem. And yesterday, not only did I get yelled at by three golfers, but they dropped a dime on me, and they sent the golf course security to come and actually tell me to get off. And then the guy said, it's for your own safety because all these golfers really stink anyway. So anyway, I guess I have to find somewhere else to practice my hills. I'm a terrorist.
That's
right. So, Mike, we have an interesting kind of combinations of shout-outs today. Our friend, who you might remember, Andrea Herman from the wonderful organization Medals for Metal, she contacted us, and she said that they are going to have a virtual half marathon. It's called a Swagtastic Virtual Half Marathon, and 100% of the proceeds for this half marathon goes to Medals for Metals. And she said that the race is literally all about swag. All the participants receive an awesome swag bag and have a chance at virtual door prizes. So if you're interested, you go to www.swagtasticrace.com, and we'll put that in our show notes too. So I put this on our Facebook page, and I told everybody if they signed up for it, I would give them a shout out, and we actually had three takers. So I would like to give a shout out to our buddy Jessica Awatona and Leslie Bird and Christine Sir, who all signed up for this virtual half marathon for this fantastic cause. And I'd like to put it out there too, if anybody's listening to this podcast and they sign up, send us a little note and we'll give you a shout out. We want to support them.
Awesome. I tell as many people as I can about Medals for Metal, and I'm hoping that all of them are responding and that Medals for Metal will have plenty of medals for metal. Say that three times fast. Okay, so we're going to do a question show, and boy, these questions are coming in hot and heavy, and Michelle and I needed some help, so we've called on two very experienced runners. My first introduction is for Evelyn DeLucia, who hails from White Plains, New York. Evelyn, welcome to the show.
Hi, Mike and Michelle. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, thank you for making the time to come on. We're going to be asking you all kinds of questions.
Look forward to it.
And also a good friend of ours from Villarica, Georgia, big Atlanta Braves fan. And he and his son Samuel and I like to talk about baseball a lot. His name is Alex Armas. Alex, welcome to the show.
Hi. Yes, it's wonderful to be with you here, finally.
Mike, before we jump into questions, can we have Evelyn and then Alex just tell us very, very quickly a little bit about their running background?
I think that's a great idea, and we'll start off with ladies first. Evelyn, you have the floor.
Okay. Well, I started at age 46, and I just needed to start running just to do something different, and I've had a couple of marathons, a goofy to my credit, and plenty of half marathons and such. And I run, but not fast, but I run.
You do great. What about you, Alex?
I started running around 2009, and started up with a local running club here where I live in Georgia that has had a lot of encouragers, a lot of people to really help me get started. And since then, have run three marathons and several half marathons and caught the Run Disney bug a few years ago and have done a Mickey Marathon, a Wine and Dine half, and also just did the Princess.
And dressed like what?
Oh, Princess Merida. I think I was the only male Princess Merida, but it was tremendous fun. A lot of fun.
It was great. Great photos from that. Okay, Mike?
Okay, so we're going to go right to the questions. And Michelle, we're going to start off with you with question number one.
Sure. This is from Carrie Harkin, and she asks us, I'm doing the Disneyland half, and I'm wondering if it's necessary to purchase Cheer Squad tickets for my husband and son. I didn't know if this is hard to get around in Disneyland as it is Disney World for spectators. Any info would be greatly appreciated. So, Mike, although we have two wonderful guests on, I actually went to our expert in cheering for this question. I emailed our buddy Dave Allen, and he says he sent us an answer, so I'm going to read off what he says. He says, here's what I came up with based on the 2012 course map. Run Disney has not published this year's map yet, so I'm not sure if this advice will hold or not. I do not see any need for a Cheer Squad package for the Disneyland half unless it offers access to the Disneyland park and that photo or video of your runner heading down Main Street is a priority. In 2010, I followed this plan. Spectated at the start line on Disneyland Drive, and then headed north to Disneyland Drive, and then stopped close to mile 4 marker. From here, you can see runners heading up the incline and exit backstage of Disneyland. Alternately, after the start, the spectators can try to head to the promenade between the two parks around mile 2.7. The decision to do this needs to be made before the start of the race so the spectators can be on the correct side of the course. A very fast spectator may be able to hit both spots, especially if their runner makes multiple photo stops in Disneyland Park. After mile 4, I headed to Disneyland Hotel for breakfast and then hung out until I was ready to head to the finish line area. I was able to stand just shy of the finish line in Disneyland on the Disneyland Hotel side, but I had to cut through some hedges. I did not have a car on that trip, so I did not attempt to spectate in town. And then he has video from that showing the start, mile 4, and the finish areas, and we're going to post that in our show notes for people to see. So, Carrie, it sounds like Dave says that you do not need, he recommends you do not buy the Cheer Squad package. And let us know what you find out, and good luck on your race.
Thanks to Dave Allen for helping us on that particular question. And Dave is the person who I go to when I need to get some cheering information and how to view any of the Run Disney races. Going to question two, this one is on the Dumbo Double Dare, and it's from Randy Crane. And Randy says, hi, Mike and Michelle. I've been listening to the podcast for a couple of months now since running the Neverland Family 5K in January, my first Run Disney event, and I love it. I'd appreciate your suggestions on something. So far, my longest run and my longest race is a 10K I did last weekend. I'll be doing the Dumbo Double Dare later this year, and I'd like to start training for it soon. But I am still not seeing anything from Jeff Galloway on a training plan for it, except the one is coming. While waiting to see what he may come up with, do you have any tips on how I can start training for it? Thanks. Now, I have my own ideas, but I'm going to turn to Evelyn because Evelyn has trained for the Goofy, so she is experienced in training for back-to-back races. So, Evelyn, what would you give for advice for Randy as far as training for the Disney, for the Dumbo Double Dare?
Mike, for Randy, I would say, well, what I do is I train for the half. And then what I do is maybe, oh gosh, 18 weeks before the actual Dumbo, I would add in a walk or a run walk on the day before, follow Jeff Galloway's half training. And then the day before, just add in another run, maybe half the mileage of the long run. Because that's what I plan on doing, because I'm doing Dumbo as well.
So, but how far out, Evelyn, do you start doing that?
Me, I'm a little more neurotic, so I actually am going to be starting very soon. But I think about 18 weeks before the actual, or 20 weeks before. You know, if you do a long run of 6 miles, say Saturday, walk or run walk 3 miles on Friday.
Okay, that sounds like great advice. Alex, have you ever had any experience training for back-to-back races? And if so, what worked best for you?
I haven't actually run back-to-back races, but in preparing for other races, whether it's a marathon or other half, basically, I think there's a lot of wisdom in what Evelyn just said. I think a couple key points are focusing on building volume and getting used to, as you guys have said on a podcast before, basically running on tired legs, even if it's with a Galloway method, and getting to a point where if you're not comfortable with just barely finishing a half, then you know you may not be there yet. So getting to a point where you're comfortable with getting close to a half mileage, and then either a day before or a day after, doing not another half, but maybe half as much again, and start that out maybe a good couple months, if not more, before, to start easing, transitioning into that, to basically get used to it. So when you get there, it's not a matter of I did it and I'm completely wiped out, but I did it and I feel okay at the end of it.
And I just wanted to add, Alex, thank you, that I just checked on the Run Disney website, and there is no specific training plan yet up for the Dumbo Double Dare, but it does go out 18 weeks, and I think both of your recommendations are great. Should we go to our next question, Mike? Or did you want, do you want to add something?
Well, I was just going to let Randy know what kind of worked for me. About, I would say, 90 days, which would be about 3 months before the actual race weekend, I would suggest that, Randy, what you may want to do is you may want to run like a Tuesday and a Thursday, and you may want to just run an hour each day. And then on Saturday, when you start doing this about 3 months before the race, you may want to run a 10K on that Saturday. And then on the Sunday following that, you may want to run a 5K. And then every week add maybe 15 minutes to that second day, so that you eventually will build up in a very slow process. But what the whole idea here is that you don't want to injure yourself and you don't want to rush it. So a gradual build up might work for you. All right, Michelle, next question.
Great advice. You did so well when we did the half and then the half marathon relay. So good. Okay, our next question is from Jen Patton, and she asks a great one. I'm sure a lot of people are going to have this question. She says, I'm torn between the Tower of Terror 10-miler and the Wine and Dine half marathon. I don't think I can afford to do both this year. I'm curious what others are choosing and why. Can you share? So I'm actually going to go to Evelyn. Evelyn, what do you think? Have you done both of these?
Yeah, Michelle, I have done both. I enjoy both of them. I'm overdue for the Wine and Dine because I've skipped a few years with that. At this point, I think I would choose the Wine and Dine only because it's a half marathon. They're both great races. TOT was a little hot this year, so I think that was kind of a bummer. But they're both fun races, and if you're not up to that half marathon yet, then TOT is a good choice because it's a 10-miler.
Great advice. What about you, Alex? I think you've done the half, but not the Tower of Terror, right?
That's right. Have not done a Tower of Terror, but did the half actually a couple years ago. And either one, you're going to have similar preparation for distances, 13 versus 10 miles. But I think one thing to consider is making sure that that you would be okay running later in the evening if you're used to running early in the mornings. And plan a few days ahead of time when you first get there for that. But I'm personally a wine and dine freak. That's my favorite time of year at Disney. And to be able to complete a half so you're not completely wiped out like from a full marathon, and then to get back into the park and have that party until 3 in the morning and the food and wine festival just going on full bore, and to be able to just replenish and your carbs with all this wonderful food, and then go ride Soaring or Test Track, and especially with friends, it was a wonderful race. Even though it did start late, a very fun experience to do the Wine and Dine. I'd recommend that for sure.
Well, I have done both of them actually, and I've done the Wine and Dine twice and the Tower of Terror once. And I think if you were going to do it just for the medal alone, I would do the Tower of Terror because I think it is probably one of my top three prize medals. It was very cool with the glow in the dark and the elevator going up and down. The Wine and Dine has the, just as you said, Alex, the, you have the party afterwards and the food carts afterwards. And then of course the distance in the differences in the distance might be appealing because one is 10 miles and the other one's a half marathon. But the heat for the Tower of Terror is potentially going to be trickier. But both are night races, so you have to prepare that way for both of them. Mike, did you want to add anything?
Yeah, when I run any Run Disney event, I'm always looking at it with a critical eye. And I think that John and John Hughes and his crew do a really good job of wine and dine. They've done a really good job over the last several years in making it a really, really good event. And I think that event is run a little bit better than the 10 miler. So if I had to choose, I would go with the wine and dine. All right, let's see. I think it's my turn to ask to read the next question. And Michelle, I think you and I could probably handle the answer for this one. It's on the Wine and Dine Resorts, and we're sticking with Wine and Dine. And it's from Laura Baker. And Laura wants to know, she says, I see there are only a few Wine and Dine host resorts. Do you think they are likely to add more? I think that, Laura, it will depend upon the signups. My assumption is that as they see the numbers grow, they may add some more resorts. They usually don't have as many host resorts for Tara Tara, Wine and Dine, and Princess as they do for the Walt Disney World Marathon Weekend, because there are not that many participants. So I'd say wait and see. Well, we might see an increase, but I really don't know at this point. Michelle, do you have anything to add to this?
I have to agree with you. I think it has to do with the number of people signed up. Several of these smaller races only have limited hotels that are host hotels. It's usually not a problem for people, but I think that if you're worried about it, I would try to stay at a host hotel. But you'll be able to get there in some way, shape, or form. Okay, so the next question is from our buddy Christine Sir, and I just gave her a shout out. And she says, I have a question. Mike recently mentioned that he had started power walking. I have constant problems with my knee and would be interested in learning more about power walking. I would like to either increase the speed portion of my walk sections when I run or walk, or perhaps even power walk whole races if I can get enough speed. Is there specific information available on how to start power walking, or is it just more of a focus on walking faster? Thanks, and love the podcast. Mike, I'd like to go to you first because I know you're recovering from your injury and you have been doing a lot of power walking. Do you want to give your tips?
Hi, Christine. So I am recovering from a real serious knee injury back in September. So I decided to do my rehab very, very carefully, very, very slowly, and I started to do some power walking. Now, the last year or so, I have been doing races using Jeff Galloway's method. So this kind of works in with how I see myself running in the future. This is what I do. I start off every workout walking a certain amount of time, and I'm trying to see what that pace is per time. So if I'm for instance, I'll walk for about 3 minutes, and I'll try to cover a certain amount of space in 3 minutes, and then I'll run for a certain amount of time. And then I'll reduce the amount of walking I do by maybe 5 seconds, 10 seconds, but trying to keep the same pace. So eventually, I'm running more than I'm walking, but when I do walk, I'm keeping the same pace. And that seems to be working really well. So I think that would work for some people, but also there are some spots, there are some areas on the internet that we will post on the show notes to help you look into power walking. Now, let's go to the next question. It comes from Justin Eckstein, and he is interested in that dopey medal. And he says, does anyone know what the 10K medal is going to look like, or the dopey medal? Michelle, I think you might have an answer for one, but I don't know about the second one.
I wanted to go to our guest first. Evelyn, do you have any idea what the medal's going to look like?
The only thing I've heard or we've talked about is the 10K may be a mini medal of some sort. And dopey, I have no idea, but I'm very curious because that's what I want among all the other medals. And I guess they're all supposed to be new from what I've heard.
Yeah, that's what I've heard too. And I'm really hoping that the 10K is a medal and not one of those plasticky medals this
yeah,
time.
Yeah, no, I think they did say it's going to be a medal, not a medallion, because usually for the 5Ks they say medallion.
Yep.
And they're saying medal, so.
Cool, cool. Okay, so the next question is from Michael Dorman, and he says, I've been a casual runner for a few years, and since January 2012, I've been training for the DW Marathon in 2014. I've never run a marathon, but I plan to run a half in June and a full in October in preparation for WDW. I've been sucked into the prospect of the new Dopey Challenge. My question is, should I even be considering entering the Dopey? I'm sure I'd be fine with the 5 and 10K. I'm not sure how I'm going to do the half and the full back-to-back. And I think this is a really interesting question, Michael, because we know that the 5K, the 10K, and the Dopey at this point are sold out. So I hope if you're considering those that you've already signed up. Mike, let's go to you first.
One of the one of the things that I've always tried to be is honest with people, and I started doing a running blog, I don't know, about 6-7 years ago, and I tried to be honest and tell people what to expect, and I hope I have helped a lot of people trying to be as honest as I can. And let me be honest with you, there are times when I am very worried about people who are trying to do too much, and because it may lead to injury. So having said that, I admire you for taking on the challenge of running a half marathon. I don't know. You don't say anything in – you say you've been a casual runner for several years, but I don't believe you have said how far you've run. I think that one of the things that a lot of people who have done a lot of half marathons, and myself included, is that I don't sometimes appreciate how it was training for my first half marathon and how daunting it was. So having said that, I really would like you to consider focusing on a half marathon and then, you know, seeing how your body reacts to that and think about running twice that distance. I think I'd like to turn to Evelyn on this, Michelle, because she trained for a long time. She's run a couple of halves and then she decided to do the Goofy, and she did it very successfully on her first try. Evelyn, can you talk to what Michael is talking about and how much of a change it was going from a half to a full?
Sure. I would definitely say get that half under your belt, because again, like you said, Mike, that full is double the amount, and it truly is a different kind of race. And I made sure that I had gotten a half under my belt, many halves actually, 10Ks, 8-milers, all kind of different mileage before I even thought about doing a marathon. But I actually did do a marathon before I did the Goofy as well. So it's just totally different preparation, and it's a challenge.
And I think another thing to remember too is I don't expect this is going to be going away. So even if you don't do it in 2014, there's nothing that says you can't do it in 2015. And there's plenty of time to ramp up. What do you think, Alex?
Mike and Evelyn, I think you're both hitting a lot of very good points. And this actually reminds me, back in 2011 was the first time I ran the Mickey Marathon. And it was so tempting to register and to run the Goofy because people... getting wrapped up in the excitement and wanting to do that myself. At the time, I had run just one other marathon before and was right on the fence in terms of preparation. But, you know, in hindsight, I'm so glad that I did not do it, because even though the Disney Marathon is slower pace typically, and I stopped and took pictures with characters and did some, you know, a lot of run walk intervals during that race, just like Evelyn said, it is still a very different race from the half. And coming off of that Mickey Marathon, I didn't expect to be as tired as I would be. So I think before you really even start to entertain doing something like a Goofy or something even more like a Dopey, that it's a really wise idea to have several of those longer races under your belt, like Evelyn said. And if you haven't actually run more than maybe, you know, one or two or three marathons, get to a point in your training where your mileage base and your volume is getting up to a pretty comfortable level where, you know, upwards of, you know, 40, 50, even 60 miles a week, where you feel much more competent between that and your long runs on handling something back-to-back like that.
And having just done my first full marathon, I agree with you that it's tempting to sign up for the Goofy just because it's there. But I know I did many halves before I did this full marathon, and I was happy that I opted out of doing the half and focused just on my marathon. And I think I have a few more before I feel comfortable with marathons too. So we talked about this in our last episode too, so you might want to listen to that, Mike. But I think this has been good advice.
And we are running out of time real quickly, so let's see how many more we can do. The next one comes from Denise Pekarik-Trowicki. Say that five times fast. And she says, here's a possible question for a future podcast. DH and I are going to be running the Wine and Dine half in November. However, we typically don't train at night, doing much of our running first in the morning. Do you have any advice for training for such a late race? Should we adjust our running schedules to get used to it? Thanks for your great podcast. I'm a new listener and really enjoy it. So, Michelle, I think you and I should go first on this because we both ran the – well, I need to get to run the Wine and Dine this year, but running the Tower of Terror and then doing the Wine and Dine back-to-back nighttime races. I didn't really train for a night race. Did you?
I didn't, and I think for – I think it's a good idea to train for a night race. I kind of wish that I had, and there are a whole bunch of reasons that I didn't. But I think the trickiest thing for these night races is the nutrition, because most of us, I think, are used to getting up and eating whatever makes us comfortable before we go out and run in the morning. And when you're training for a night race, to stay off your feet all day long and then to figure out what you're going to eat that day that's going to make you feel comfortable and how long before the race is very tricky. And I think that if you practice your nutrition for a nighttime race ahead of time, you know, maybe 2 weeks ahead of time to kind of see what makes your stomach feel okay, then I think that's a good way to go about it. What do you think, Mike?
Well, I think that the other thing is that if Denise, if you've run any run Disney events in Walt Disney World, and you have an idea of as to what your schedule would be, I think that you know what works, what doesn't work, and you have to adjust. And that means getting down there a day or two before that race and trying to figure out what works. Going to bed at a certain time, eating at a certain time, and that. But you just have to try to figure out what works best for you. And I think that Michelle was on mute again. Michelle, did you want to say something?
It's never happened so many times. I was wondering what Evelyn thinks, because she's done a lot of these nighttime races too.
Well, you know, for me, the fact of running at night wasn't a big deal, because a lot of my training runs I do, you know, after work, except for the long runs on the weekend. The nutrition was a challenge because I also wasn't too certain, because usually I have a, you know, bagel and peanut butter in the morning the day of. So what I did is I just had a bigger meal earlier in the day, and then I had a snack, you know, while we were waiting in the corrals. And I also slept a little later that day so that I'd be a little fresher for that night. It's just kind of like working with your body, you know.
I agree. Good advice.
Alex, anything you'd like to add to that?
You guys seem to hit the three main points, which was nutrition, the sleep patterns, and then the stay off your feet, which I can't help but notice every time we go to Disney World, just without knowing it. I'd really like to take my Garmin sometime, and I've heard of you, Mike, even saying you do this, and see how many miles I walk, because unknowingly you can wear yourself out, really wear your feet and your legs out. So it's something to really watch. The Wine and Dine that I did that night did exactly what Evelyn said, and just, you know, timed my meal out. A good, you know, several hours before, stayed off my feet, made sure went to sleep at the right time so I wasn't a zombie, and it really worked out very well.
Mike, just to add to Alex, I did take a pedometer a couple of times, and if you're like in Epcot, you could be walking actually about 10 miles, if you can believe that.
My son Liam and I went one summer, about two summers ago. We went from about 9 in the morning till 3 in the morning, and we did 18 miles. Two different parks. I turned it off on the monorail in between, but we did 18 miles of walking that day.
Yeah, on average, it's been shown usually about 6 to 8 miles, depending upon the park. What I have recommended, and we're running out of time, what I have recommended to those who decide to do the Tower of Terror and Wine and Dine, to just go to the studios in the morning, get out of there at noon and rest up, and you should be okay.
The studios, because it's the smallest park?
The smallest park, and just relax and do a few things in the morning, and that's basically go do Toy Story Mania, maybe Tower of Terror, and that's it. Maybe have a nice breakfast before then. Again, the food thing is different for everybody, but that's what I usually tell people. Michelle, anything before we say goodbye?
No, I know we have a lot of questions, and I want to thank people for being patient. We've had a few different events in the past few weeks that have come up, but we will get to your questions if we haven't already.
Yes, and we want to thank Evelyn DeLucia from White Plains and Alex Armas from Villa Rica, Georgia, and Evelyn from White Plains, New York, for helping us on this show.
Is Evelyn from White Plains, New York?
She's from White Plains, New York.
That's
right.
Thank you,
Alex.
White
Plains, Georgia, yeah.
Thank you both.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Our pleasure.
And so for Evelyn DeLucia, for Alex Armas, for Michelle Scribner-McLean, this is Mike Scopa saying we will see you on the road.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/Mickey Miles Podcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Mickey Miles Pod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com. We'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gray, saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.